Episode 32 of Consistently Above Average is here. Sunday the 27th of April, 2025. The early afternoon following Cage Warriors 188 and after UFC Kansas City, which is actually in Missouri, not in the state of Kansas. Headlined by Ian Machado Gary against Carlos Prates. Carlos. Initially had planned on recording this episode last night. Stayed up and watched UFC instead after I got home from Cage Warriors. Bad decision. Fell asleep, missed the main event. Woke up in the last 90 seconds of the fifth round. And then had a terrible sleep after that, going to bed at 6 o'clock in the morning. Not the best idea. However, important night, mixed martial arts for Ireland in that sense, that we had Cage Warriors and Ian headlining over in the United States. And there is a bit of correlation between the two that I want to get into further on later on in the episode. But more importantly, episode number 32. Number 32 was, of course, the number that Theo Walcott wore when he joined Arsenal. It's my new Arsenal jersey I got over at the Emirates this week. On sale, spring sale. End of the season is the best time to buy an away jersey because it's always going to be cheaper. And 32, Theo Walcott's number. It's also the ideal number for a bracket in a competition that you might be doing at a jiu-jitsu tournament, because you win your first match, it becomes 16. Win your second, it becomes 8. Third, it becomes 4. Fourth, it becomes 2. 5, it becomes 1. 5 is the optimal number of matches. I've only ever won a bracket of 4 matches in a row. 4 wins for a gold. I've never got to win a bracket of 32 or more. I think 5 is just perfect. 5 matches. You can say 5 matches, 5 submissions, gold today. Brilliant. Beethoven, of course. How could you not remember? How could you ever forget? He created 32 piano sonatas. The most famous of which, of course, was number 14. Not my personal favourite, but the popular choice, number 14, which is Moonlight Sonata. And last but not least, a standard football, a soccer ball, is created from 32 separate leather panels. So there you go. So last night in the RDS, we had Cage Warriors 188. 16 fighters who are based either north or south of the border competed on that card last night. Out of 22 total fighters, which is a great turnout. I did say yesterday, I could be wrong about that, 22 total fighters. I have that written down here, but I think there was 15 fights, which means there'd be 30 fighters. May have got the sums wrong on that one. Anyway, I can't check now. We've already started recording. But I did say yesterday on Twitter that I believe 11 different Irish gyms were represented in some form as well in terms of people on that card, which is another great takeaway from it. I do think that might be the most ever different gyms, professional-wise, professional fighters-wise, on a card in Ireland since the early days of Cage Contender or something like that, where just people were fighting pro, but there wasn't an amateur scene as such. Cage Warriors, and in particular Ian Dean, the matchmaker, they're known for very well-matched fights. Ian, for years now, has been routinely lauded as one of the best matchmakers in the world, and that proof comes from the fact of how many exciting, tightly contested fights there has been on Cage Warriors over the last decade. Unfortunately, the card itself at the start did not help the venue or the arena catch a spark. It was set up really nice. Last year's one was very good as well. I think last year maybe had a bigger attendance, but it didn't sell out. Whereas this year it was a smaller venue, I think. I don't think it was configured for as much seats. It definitely seemed a little bit more intimate anyway, but it was sold out and it was quality. Now, what I mean by didn't catch fire, you had pockets of groups of individual fans of fighters who were competing that would obviously cheer when the person walked out and encourage them as the fight went on. But the first 7 fights in a row all had an Irish element involved in it, whether that was Ireland against Ireland or Ireland against someone who was brought in. The only finish in those 7 fights was a submission loss against Emer Darcy, unfortunately. So while the 6 decisions came from very well-matched and good fights that you saw a significant amount of Irish wins from that, 6 out of 6 to be exact. There was something just lacking in the sense that there could have been more finishes, like the knock-on effect that could have had to the venue just wasn't there. All right. What I mean, somebody could have been there early, later on, to cheer on Adam Darby or Alexander O'Sullivan or something like that. And then the opening fight of the night, Jamie Abbott-Bissett, he dropped his opponent, and had he have maybe like swarmed and gone for the kill just a second or two earlier, could have got a finish, could have got a stoppage, kicked off the night in the right, in the best possible way with a TKO stoppage. And then that sets the tone for the evening, because all of the other groups of fans and pockets of other fighters that they're there to support are cheering an Irish person winning in stoppage, for example. And that can be something that catches on in the venue. You know, then I was trying to think of a better word than catching on, and my brain is working slower today. Like a knock-on effect, like a domino effect. Of there's one, there's two, there's three, there's four. The whole venue is going mad. Loads of finishes, loads of stoppage, quick turnaround. Pacing of cage warriors is always outstanding. So like before the fighters are out of the cage, getting their picture taken, the next fighter is already walking down. Sorry, the exact same thing happened in the Kenny and Matthew fight as well. Kenny was down in the scorecards, almost pulls off a clutch Kimura victory in the second round. You know, had that have happened, that would have set the place mental. Kieran Brady, very close in particular with two separate head and arm chokes. Excellent defense and escapes from Giovanni Fernandez, who was his opponent. Scott Harvey had one of the tougher tests as well in the prelims. He passed it very impressively. 30-27 unanimous decision victory. His opponent, a guy called Leon Arms, quite highly rated. He won the early exchanges on the feet, which prompted Scott to initiate the grappling. But from there, Scott grew into his striking massively. One point in particular, a right cross that was disguised nicely with two pawing lefts, left hands to kind of gauge the distance, dropped Leon. And then another left hook later in the fight dropped him. And much like his teammate, Matthew, earlier on en route to a victory, he had to deal with a little bit of worry from a Kimura attempt as well. But what I'm trying to say, one other thing actually that I had noted here, sitting down the back of the venue at my little book yesterday, fighters names in red, information in black, just so it's separated nicely. Scott hit this twice. He off a body kick, I think it was the catch and the high lift into a dump, nearly like a Muay Thai dump or sweep. Insanely overpowered for the world of MMA if he can get good at it. Gives the person on the receiving end a much harder scramble to deal with once that they have hit the mat. And I think it's better than like catching it and maybe trying to get a strike off, or catching it and turning it into a single leg. Catch and the high lift, high dump, definitely good. But what I'm trying to say about those four fights in particular is not that there was anything wrong with a well-matched, hard-fought decision victory. In a different world, on a different night, we're sitting here talking about how the first four fights of the evening went by in a flash because of four great finishes. Alexander O'Sullivan got a victory over Dara Thoman with some very efficient striking to enter into grappling exchanges. Completely controlled the grappling exchanges for the most part. Had great back control as well for a large part of the first and second round. I had a little bit of sympathy for Alex in that situation, even though Dara is a friend and a teammate of mine, because I've been on that man's back before and it is a tough nut to crack. But Alex got the win, 3-0, now moves to as a pro. And his story for me was one of the most important ones on the night. He revealed to the L Triangle on SevereMMA.com that he was scheduled to fight for Cage Warriors in Dublin in 2023. He had had about four MRIs up until that point in his career. This particular MRI discovered that he had suffered a stroke and had a bleed on his brain and hadn't known about it. And it was found out later that there was a potentially a hole in his heart could have been the cause of it. He was put on medication after that. He was pulled from his fight. He wasn't able to spar or train hard. Future scans, from what I believe he said, that, or the quote that I have here from him, from what he said on the podcast, was he'd been given the all clear, didn't need to have the surgery as the hole in the heart had gotten smaller and no more issues in the brain after two more subsequent MRIs. allowed him to clear to fight again. Now, for me, hearing that when I was listening to it from the lads and then seeing that he won, admittedly against, as I said, a friend and a training partner, very happy for him to be able to get that experience again, for him to be able to get the win, to compete again in the thing that he cares about the most. And it does open up a whole other discussion, one that means a lot to me, especially. Because if you want to fight mixed martial arts in the Republic of Ireland, that's at an amateur level at an event or at a professional level at an event, you essentially have to go through some of the strongest health and safety checks on the planet, higher than anywhere else on the planet, essentially. This is a cost to the promotion, so promotions have to have stuff like trauma rooms available on site in case anything happens. But fighters need to go through a more extensive medical than they would if they were going to fight in other places. This is at a cost to the athletes of getting their own medicals done, which does include an up-to-date brain scan before being allowed to fight. And this was recommended and implemented after the passing of João Carvalho, which was 9 years ago, earlier on this month. Which is very hard to think it's actually been that long since it happened. So as I said, if you wish to compete, aside from the blood work, aside from the medicals, you need the valid and up-to-date brain scan from within the last 12 months. There has been, and still is, huge opposition to somebody requiring this to fight in mixed martial arts in the South. In Alexander O'Sullivan's case, he could have been putting himself potentially at future risk or further risk by fighting without knowing that he had suffered a stroke or even that he had a bleed on his brain. The event in question where this happened, I'm pretty sure there was no more than 250 or 300 at a push of us left in the venue. But as far as I know, we, Severe MMA at the time, were the only people in the country with that fight that was fully recorded. Now, from what I remember, and maybe I'll get a phone call from Graham correcting me on this. Probably not. Graham doesn't listen to this. I don't think that we published the fight online. Maybe we did and it was taken down very shortly afterwards. But I do know that by the time we got home and we were editing and stuff like that, we know that João had been brought to a hospital after his fight. And I can remember Joe.ie had the fight up and they had the footage up and the finish up. And the clip was being used as if to say, like, this is how brutal and this is how terrible this sport is and it's barbaric and X, Y, and Z. But I don't think that they were there recording the full fight. The promoter didn't have the fight recorded. A young lad who used to train with us and was also helping with a lot of Severe MMA stuff, he was sitting cage side recording it for us. And I can remember at the finish, thinking that the finish was so intense, the fight was so intense, I can remember running across the venue to him to make sure that he got an angle of the finish because it was such an intense looking finish to a fight. And then just a few days later, realizing like what had happened and thinking like I was mad excited over that, not realizing like what had happened, if that makes sense, even though nothing happened there and then in the cage. But unfortunately, João Carvalho passed away about 48 hours after undergoing emergency surgery on his brain after the fight. And I was rung by the guards then 2 days after, or the week after the fight. I was contacted by the guards. I had to get the bus up to Dublin. They didn't pay for the bus up to Dublin, just so we're clear. Had to get the bus up to Dublin, was picked up in an unmarked Ford Focus right off the bus by two guards, brought to a station. And was asked questions about the event, gave an interview about the fight, gave the footage over, signed the footage over, signed that it hadn't been edited or doctored in any way or something like that. And then it was handed over, from what I remember, to the state pathologist who studied it. Now, an inquest was taken into the fight, and the result, it took 2 years, the inquest. Result findings were around April 2018 and heard from a neurosurgeon, Professor Dan Healy, who said he was told that there was a limited budget for the event when he raised concerns with the promoter over the presence of a suitably qualified medical personnel at the venue. And I can remember Dan potentially telling me sometime later after the fact, when we ended up discussing this in another capacity, that he was so concerned at the promoters, like, laissez-faire, if that makes sense. Like, no, we don't, we're not going to have that there. That he actually went to the show as a fan, bought a ticket and was there. And was able to make himself available to help assist, from what I remember, after the fact, after he took ill and started losing consciousness 10 minutes after the fight. But the fact that he had raised those concerns and then went to the event himself because he's worried about the safety for the fighters, because he knew that there wasn't potentially adequate coverage if something bad had happened. To be honest, this particular line from the inquest report does make it hit quite hard. It's the quote from Dan Healy from the case. Mr. Silva indicated there was a limited budget for the event and that safety standards required were not possible. Mr. Carvalho died 2 days after the fight at Beaumont Hospital on April 11th, 2016. So, while I am sorry for the sidetrack of that story, the main point is the sport of mixed martial arts is incredibly dangerous. There are very real risks. And I understand it's very hard for events to happen in the South now because of the costs that are associated with it. It's why the majority of events now happen in the North, outside of professional events, the PFLs, the Bellators, maybe in future the UFCs, Cage Warriors happening in the South. But I do think that hearing Alexander's story, realising that those things put in place helped to be able to catch that. There are countless other examples of stuff that has come up over the years that has helped warn people the potential things that could be wrong with them through the requirement of the added safety scans for competing in the fight. I do think that gym owners or coaches or MMA coaches, regardless, if they're having them fight up north or having them fight in the UK, you probably should be encouraging, maybe not once a year, maybe if you're happy doing it longer than that, you should probably be encouraging your athletes or finding ways to help your athletes get these scans for your own peace of mind, their peace of mind, their future health. I know it was described to me at the time that this new law or this new rule would mean that it means that a person starting their amateur career maybe goes on 10 years and then finishes their pro career, they will have a picture of what their brain looked like over the 10-year period, which previously they wouldn't have had. So this is what your brain was like before MMA. This is what your brain is like after MMA. And we are seeing now the reality of those like early generation UFC fighters that are suffering from CTE and different traumas experienced from fighting. And look, I know it's expensive and I know, oh, sure, I got my bloods done. The doctor said I'm fine. I can do that. I'm just going to fight up north. That's 100%. But it is something that you hear quite regularly as a quote or as a meme or as a topic. The billionaire who's about to die on his deathbed due to health-related illnesses would give away every cent he owns to have his health back and to be able to keep living. So you can't really put a price on that sort of peace of mind and security. But shout out Alexander O'Sullivan. Fair play. I'm delighted that you got back. Delighted you got to do what you love more than anything again in front of your friends, your family, your teammates. And hopefully that is 3-0 and soon to be 4, 5, 6, 7, 8-0 moving forward as well. Emer Darcy had her opponent under a lot of pressure in this fight. Dropped her pretty early in the round as well. A lot of the strikes from that point on were wearing the body down, as it seemed like she could have just been like a half step outside of the range to go for the head a little bit cleaner. It was the biggest comeback of the night, to be honest. Daniela was being well and truly outstruck in the fight. But she landed a right hook that caught Emer off guard. Dropped her. Emer went into guard, I think, onto her back. Attempted a submission that maybe caused Daniela to pass and stack her to turtle. Emer tried to wrestle up. The arm was caught in a strange way. Daniela ended up grabbing the wrist, stepped over. Nice armbar finish. 2-1 as a pro now for Emer Darcy, but definitely a growth moment capable there from that situation. Between the UK, Europe, the domestic scene, potentially even, and with the help of Cage Warriors, her goal of being a Cage Warriors world champion is certainly not dead in the water. What happened next, a fight that I enjoyed tremendously, and I checked Twitter afterwards to see how much my friend Sean Sheehan enjoyed it as well, and he had tweeted about it as well. Conor McCarthy had a very short notice replacement fight on this card. Conor was 3-0 going into this fight. His original opponent was meant to be someone who was 5-2. He ended up fighting a 6-5 fighter named Joshua Unworthy. Conor has been visibly fit for the professional scene since he was gearing towards the end of his amateur career. He made his amateur debut in September 2021. Within 2 years, he had had 14 amateur fights and was about to turn pro. If he gets one more in before September of this year, he will have gone 5-0 within 18 months of turning pro, which is an incredible turnaround. Peter Queeley, his head coach, waxed lyrical about him in the past through interviews as well with Severe MMA, because his amateur career happened while he was still in college. While he was still not able to train full time, he was juggling fighting, amateur MMA training, and college. Now he is training full time as a professional athlete. I thought it was quite interesting at the venue that he the sound blew before his walkout, so he had to walk out to complete silence, and then his people realized what was happening, and then they started cheering and got a chant going, which was a very cool dynamic. But walking out in a huge building like that with no music, no sound, no nothing, could have given you the spooks beforehand. But technically, this fight was quite a high level, like something that you would not see out of place on a UFC event. Genuinely, the two lads respected and knew that the other could do damage to the other, and it was nearly like a very tactical, technical, analytical battle between the two of trying to suss out what the other person was strongest at. Very feint heavy with the hands, very level change heavy from Conor McCarthy's perspective as well. A lot of good shots to the body. Joshua's head movement and evasiveness while moving backwards was incredibly impressive to get out of range of some of Conor's strikes, but not evade them all. Just not allowing Conor to land maybe the combination of strikes that could have set up a finish. He was maybe landing one on the exchange instead of three, and that was thanks to Joshua's movement. It was an incredibly tense fight that seemed like there was a finish about to happen at any moment if one of these exchanges actually clicks and lands. Joshua was biting to every single one of Conor's feints. Conor, on the other hand, was barely reacting or biting to Joshua's, which showed he was like nearly like, I know you're not going to hear. I know you're not going to. I know you're not going to. It was incredibly good to watch. Ice cold in his reads of Joshua's striking, and very comfortable in the ranges that he was fighting at. And we do have a tendency in the sport here to compare and contrast and link one guy to another who's, oh, this is the next whoever, this is the next whatever, this is just like that. But in terms of his amateur activity and his busyness now as a young professional, there will be parallels drawn between himself and Ian Garry, especially the age element as well of the two of them, of what they're doing. They were both kind of like natural athletes as well before they got into the sport of mixed martial arts. So there is definitely a little bit of a correlation there. The next fight, Chasen Blair, right? Me and my mate were sitting next to a load of Americans. They were over to support Blair. This man is too good for cage warriors. Just call a spade this man. I know he had a hard loss against Cody Steele, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu's Cody Steele, recently transitioned to MMA. On Dana White's Contender Series, but he absolutely should be in the UFC. He was levels above his opponent last night, and it set up very nicely with the finish for what was one of the better atmospheres of the night. Professional debut for Joe Doyle against Keith Kyo. Both had excellent walkouts, the best two walkouts of the night. Daddy Cool from Boney M and Jump Around from House of Pain. Both had great numbers of crowd support, but Keith Kyo got the finish in the first round with a rear naked choke. Keith is someone who has spent a lot of time developing from the end of his amateur career, stepping into coaching roles, into CMAC. He's now 2-0 as a pro, and he's absolutely all the better for it. The buy-in that they have created in CMAC is very strong. People believing in the work and in the processes, which is essentially important for people coming into the team and coming up through the ranks, as well as the support from friends in the crowd. The support that he had, I think, was the largest of the night. Definitely the loudest of the night. But I think it could have been during the next fight or the one after that. I'm not 100% sure. But there was a fight happening on in the cage. But we were sitting at the back and we looked outside because we just heard all of this noise and shouting and roaring. And it was Keith going outside to his mates. And they rushed him. And then they put him up on his shoulders and they were going around the car park with him on his shoulders. And he's just there on top of it going mad. And this is all while there's a fight going on inside. And there was a better noise and better atmosphere outside the venue in the car park than there was inside the venue at that time. which was an absolute great thing to see. Now, I'm not trusting the Peugeot at the minute over long distances. We've been going into limp mode a little bit recently. Peugeot 308 needs to be driven into a wall at this point. So me and my mate got the train up. So we were a little bit cautious and worried about the time because there obviously Cage Warriors had to go live at a certain time because of Fight Pass and stuff like that. So there was a small delay in the venue. But by the time that we got to it, we figured out we would probably have to leave with two or three fights left. So I did get to see Adam Darby, Solomon Simon and Max Lally's victories. Darby probably threw and landed the most amount of elbows in one single MMA fight that I've ever seen in my life. It was an absolute striking clinic. His opponent is one of the toughest people that I've ever come across in terms of durability-wise in mixed martial arts. I have absolutely no idea how he wasn't finished, but it was an incredibly one-sided win for Adam Darby that moves him up now to 4-1 as a pro. Solomon Simon, standout of the night. I think fairly handy to say that, comfortably say that. Said afterwards that he either wants world title or the prize fighter, the 50 grand tournament the Cage Warriors do. Prize fighter would be great. World title also would be great. 6-0 now as a pro. They might give him one more, but like to finish, he finished him in just over 90 seconds, a minute and 43 seconds, with such a peach of a shot that I recorded by complete fluke. It's up on our story on Instagram. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And lost his foot and face planted, everything. Brilliant finish. Cage Warriors, like, let's go back. Solomon's opponent from last night took the previous champion to a decision before the champion, Hardwick, lost 2 events ago. So it's currently a Brazilian guy, I think based in the United States, who'd been fighting with LFA, who's currently the Cage Warriors lightweight champion. Probably not longer term business sense for them to have an American based champion. Usually they have European champions. I don't know if they have any US events scheduled, but I wouldn't mind seeing bringing that guy over maybe in July, the show in London. And the reason why I'm saying that I'm just not sure to have it in London for something like that for Solomon is because even though the show yesterday sold out, getting towards the end of the show, as we go towards the business end of the event, the crowd had thinned massively. Maybe it thinned more by the time after I had left as well. But it's because people are buying tickets to support their friends and their teammates, and a night out at a show with a few drinks, etc., that becomes very much, oh, well, we're just going to leave now if the person that you're supporting loses. Whereas the UFC has like brand name, whatever, we're there for the first prelim to the last sort of stuff. That sort of thing does not happen with these particular shows, in my experience. So if you were to put Solomon Simon main eventing at Cage Warriors Dublin for a world title, you're going to have to bus up a load of Waterford. Do you know what I mean? To make it have the atmosphere a fight like that deserves. Whereas if you have it on the stacked London show, maybe as the co-main or third from the top three title fights, then that would be the thing to do. And look, I don't think it's a bad thing that people buy tickets to support their friends and leave after their friends have fought later on in the event. If they could stay for longer, it'd be great. Sometimes they can't. There's buses arranged, whatever, they have to go. That's no problem. And the last one before we go, Max Lally's Cage Warriors debut. A lot of talk going around about Max recently as he has spent time out in Australia as a training partner with Alexander Volkanovski. They had trained before in Bang Tao in Thailand last year and trained again then recently this year, which prompted for him to become a sparring partner for Alex's camp. He impressed the right person. Could have been Alex, it could have been his coach, I don't know. But I do think he was invited by the coach anyway out to Australia to be one of the main training partners for Volkanovski's camp, where he recently reclaimed his UFC featherweight title. Now, excuse the term Craig Jones bullshit, but Max's triangle was some type of Craig Jones type bullshit. Really, really good. Had the opportunity to go for a potential armbar in the scramble before that on the transition, decided to go for the damage instead, landed some very good elbows from like a position here, chest forward, opponents sitting down on their ass back against the cage from that position. Landed some very good elbows from there. And then went for the damage instead in the armbar transition and then ultimately got the triangle, which was a great finish. Now, I've known of Max for years. He was regularly training in photos with a lot of the SPG pros, like when he was younger and when they were much younger too as well. I can remember there's a good picture of him and Richie Smullen training together when I think Richie was helping out with the teens classes, or Richie gave a lot of time to a lot of the teens back in SPG at the time. I do know that he, his dad told me before, I think he went to SPG Concord as a yellow belt. His dad, John, we have to give a shout out to a very well-known man in the jiu-jitsu and MMA community. We've had many, many good conversations over the years, and advice given to me from John has been very invaluable in many elements of life. So I am very aware that this is a biased situation. It's weird how I'm saying that I'm biased there, and I kind of like brushed over the fact that Kieran Brady is one of the most inspiring mixed martial arts stories in the world of Irish MMA today. 4-0, Kieran the Body Lock Brady. You could not meet a nicer person, but I feel like there's a difference in biases of the people that you train with and that you see every day versus the people that you're friendly with from other places that you've known over the years. But in regards, this thought came to my head after Max had won. So me and my mate Ben, we were standing at the back of the arena waiting to go after the fight. We see Max get the submission. He scales the cage. He jumps into the crowd to his mates all in the yellow t-shirts. And just a few down is his mum and his dad. And his mum and his dad are at the railing. And then Max goes away off back into the cage. And I continued looking over at the direction. So his mum then is hugging and talking to other people. But his dad, John, is just forearms onto the railing, just looking forward like this. Just straight forward. And it was mad. It was mad to watch from my perspective, other side of the building. I have spoken to plenty of parents over the years about their kids fighting and how does it feel and what is it like watching and stuff like that and the worry that they have for such an occasion. And I turned to my mate, who was a couple of pints in at this point, but he called me a gobshite and said, that's typically you to notice stupid shit like that. And then he went away off dondering about by himself before he left. And I said, look at him after winning that fight. He's after winning, but he's still somebody's son. A family can celebrate a win, but at the same time, a family will also commiserate a loss. There's always going to be one group ecstatic and one group devastated. And a couple of years ago, when the gyms in the north during COVID opened a little bit before the ones in the south, John took Max and Alex Kyo up to train with us in Newry one Sunday night for an open mat. And something that stuck out to me that day was about the sacrifice that fathers will go through and mothers will go through to give their kids a good start or an advantage when they're interested in something, when they're younger. Now, Max is a little bit of an enigma currently in the sport of MMA in Ireland because he represents SBG Charlestown, headed up by Owen Roddy. He does jiu-jitsu in Northside BJJ with Tom Birmingham, and he does wrestling and MMA also in SBG Nace with Sergey and Peter Queeley. He has trained striking in Dublin Combat Academy, and he has gone abroad to train in Thailand and be around the right environments and expose himself to the right situations with the right attitudes, the right gratitudes at the right time, and then opportunities present themselves. Let's make this clear. This is not a fluke. This is not a fluke in any way, shape or form. This is hard work and persistence paying off when it matters the most. Before you become the man and the adult winning professional fights in the RDS, you are somebody's son. You are reliant on your dad. You are reliant on your mom. You're being driven to training. You're being driven one side of the M50. You're being driven to another side of the M50. You're being taken to England for jiu-jitsu competitions, paid entirely for by your parents' efforts. And that is what you're going to see so much more of now in the next few years as a generational shift happens of younger and younger professional athletes who are turning pro in mixed martial arts at the age of 18, at the age of 19, but they've been embedded in martial arts since they were 7, 8 or 9. They've come up through that era. It is important, obviously, to have a solid network above you as you navigate that teenage era. And I do see it in my own gym. It's going to pay off tenfold for these people too. It is inevitable. I can see it a mile away. And hopefully they can believe that it's going to happen for themselves as well. We're just a year or two behind that current pipeline and trajectory because those people that we're talking about have been doing it for just a little bit longer. You can have all of the talent or ability in the world to make that initial breakthrough, but if you don't have that support from a younger age that's backed by belief from your parents, who your parents are willing and not putting you under pressure to go and do X, Y, and Z or go the conventional route of college or whatever like that, like, that is so important, and I don't think people will realize how important it is, and only the ones that have made that young breakthrough realize when they look back, yeah, that's because of my ma and da to a large part. They're not paying his way, just to be clear. It's not like, not that it matters if they were or if they weren't. He has been doing tradesman work. He has been working cold early mornings, terrible weather, apprenticeships, working in butchers, sitting in cold rooms, fridges. You know, his dad told me before about sending him to the butchers after a fight before Cage Warriors, and he was there hacking carcasses for 7 or 8 hours in a cold room the Sunday after fighting on a Saturday. Don't get me wrong, he's absolutely going to need more tests in his career. He's only 4-0 now. How he holds up against an aggressive striker with an explosive wrestling base, takedown defense, good takedown defense, will be very interesting. I do think his striking looked the best that it's ever looked last night. There's a definite improvement there. But I do think that you have to grow into this. Like, that is the biggest question. And questions, as John Kavanagh used to always say, are a good thing because it means people are invested and they want to see how you do against X, Y, or Z. Maybe some people want to see you win. Maybe some people want to see you lose. But you do need to grow into that confidence muscle. You need to have that, your confidence muscle, like, flexed and ready to go, that you've done the work, you've had the experiences, the bad experiences in training. And at the end of the day, when a fight can come down to a flip of a coin against a well-matched opponent, you need to be ready for that last sort of bit that's going to push you over the line. My final thought on this, though, just so that we can start to wrap up this particular episode, is that maybe going all the way to Cage Warriors gold, world champion status in Cage Warriors, no longer guarantees that you're just going to get on the next UFC London. We have now seen James Webb representing Team KF. He's a 2-weight Cage Warriors world champion, slightly older in years. The UFC aren't knocking down the door to sign somebody a little bit older at the minute. But a 2-weight world champion, that should be like snapped up immediately, get them in the UFC. But the UFC are no longer sitting around watching. As we discussed this last week, they're not sitting around on a Saturday in Vegas watching Cage Warriors with a notepad and pen. Sean Shelby picks the phone up straight away and says, get me this guy. Like, they're not scouting. The UFC don't need to scout. There is no scouting network for mixed martial arts to get into the UFC. What I actually think the next current route is, which is what you're probably going to see a lot more Irish lads go down, and ladies, go down the route over the next couple of years, and it's what I would advise somebody doing if you would care for my opinion on it, is try to get to 4-5, 6-0 at a push, and then Dana White's Contender Series. You're going to be on that lower wage contract, but you're going to get into the UFC. And you're going to be going about it the harder way. But if that's what you want, if it is the dream of that glove with UFC written on it, and that's what you want, that's probably your best way of getting into it at the moment. So, like, if you want to get paid, then there's a different route for that. Okay, we've seen it previously with Bellator, now PFL or Octagon and stuff like that. Those things, if we've already seen Bellator's gone, those things I don't think are capable of lasting the length of time that something like Cage Warriors has lasted. So, I'm being thrown for a run today recording this episode. I'm here talking about there always somebody's son. Well, I've just had to pause it because I forgot to tell my dad his cottage pie's been in the oven for 40 minutes. So that was a quick shout down the stairs there. Sorry about that. But what I'm saying is, longer term or shorter term, if you want to get paid, you want to try and make money from professional MMA, then you need to try build up a record good enough to be able to get you into the promotion that can give you more in the short term. If you do want the longer term, you want to get to the UFC and try to be there for a long time, then Cage Warriors is still one of the proven paths to try and get there. Now, Cage Warriors have been slated for their purses in the past compared to what other people pay. Although I did hear that fighters got €30 per ticket they sold, which is quite good from a commission perspective. And it is still a way to the pathway to the UFC, don't get me wrong. But as we saw with the Paul Hughes, will he go to the UFC PFL issue after his Cage Warriors run, we saw the insane fights that he had in Cage Warriors at a golden generation for his divisions, that he was well above the entry level pay of the UFC. He was well more deserving of that for his actual ability-wise. He's now since gone on to show that he is one of the best lightweights on the planet by a considerable distance and would do damage in the UFC if he was in the UFC's lightweight division right now as well. But the UFC have no reason to give more money to an entry-level fighter anymore. They don't need to do that anymore. They are set. We talked about this last week. They are the biggest product in the world. And they're the biggest product in the world for a reason. The same way Arsenal let Chido Obi Martin go to Manchester United because United are happy to pay £30,000 a week to a 16-year-old. Arsenal, who have a little bit of class and decorum in the sport, were like, we don't care what 16-year-old you are. We're not breaking our structures for that. So, and as a side, just as a side point, I do think that Paul Hughes has done very, very well for himself with PFL. It's paid off for him. Everyone on the planet of mixed martial arts now knows who he is. And I think that one day he will end up going to the UFC for like the biggest free agent transfer in mixed martial arts. And then he will get his huge pay from the UFC. He just wasn't going to get it walking in the door after coming through from Cage Warriors. So if you are amateur now or young pro, and you feel that you want the dream of the UFC gloves and the experience, and it might end up with you being on European cards or in the Apex or Fight Night series or who knows where it could go to, the most likely thing that has to happen right now, in my opinion, is through the Contender Series, through Road to UFC, through Tough, or something that they'll launch off the back of this new media rights deal as well. Dana White's looking for a fight, might come back on Netflix, you don't know. But here's why the likes, and to round it up in what I said about this contrast between, like, say, Ian Garry and the local scene and stuff like that. The likes of Adam Darby, Solomon Simon, Kieran Brady, Conor McCarthy, Keith Kyo, Alexander O'Sullivan, Scott Harvey, Matthew Elliott, Jamie Abbott Bissett, in my opinion, will now have some degree of pull with Irish MMA fans in the future. And it's because they either watched this card in its entirety or they attended this event in some capacity. And they fought on these cards and they won. The people attending these shows are the same people who, by and large, well, not even probably most of them, but a large cohort, I would say, listen to the different podcasts over on Severe MMA. They listen to The Crack with Pete Carroll. They probably consume Ariel Helwani's show. They probably consume something else. Not this. This is a jiu-jitsu show. The people who go to these events then have lived and learned experience from being at these events. They've felt adrenaline being there. They've felt compassion. They've felt endorphins. They've had skin in the game because they've paid their cash to go and watch the events and the shows. And they know or remember these names at least, especially if someone got a good finish. You're going to remember that chap who got that last night with the armbar. A 17-year-old version of me, the day after my first MMA fight, my parents pushed back our holiday so I could go to my first MMA event, which was in 2010. I met Paul McVeigh in the airport the next morning going back to Scotland, and I thought he was a superstar, thought he was a celebrity. I was like, I was at your fight last night. You were unreal. You know, like, the general Joe Soap becomes fans of these people and puts them on a higher pedestal. So the contrast that I mentioned and why that's important in comparison to Ian Garry, who has now had 24 fights over a professional and amateur level, losing only two, once at amateur, once as professional. He only fought in the South twice as an amateur and once as a professional. His entire Cage Warriors run was in England. One of them was in Cork, one fight in Cork. He then had the high profile split from Team KF, went into the UFC, joined a certain team, then ended up joining another team throughout his UFC run, and has been in different places. But he didn't go into the UFC on the back of support of an Irish gym. And that mattered, in my opinion, so much to not have the general whirlwind, as we would call it, of support, universal support for an Irish fighter, as we have seen others when they do when they get into the UFC. But broadly speaking, when I'm even talking about like whirlwind of support and all the push of the Irish MMA community, think of that expression, the Irish MMA community. That is a bubble. That is a niche. That is a niche within a niche. The sport of mixed martial arts is a niche. The domestic Irish MMA community, that is a niche within a niche. It's a niche, if that's even a word. And that bubble is based off, like, what, Twitter? Not really anymore. Instagram comments? Instagram reels? Buying Instagram followers? Buying a page and then rebranding it? Do you really trust Instagram reel views, Facebook comments? Like, what is this support that I'm even talking about? It probably doesn't even exist. But we're in our own little bubble. We're in our own little niche. And it feels like that we're just talking to each other sometimes. We're not actually talking to the masses. We're not talking to the mainstream. It's not like this sport is championed in the national media, in the mainstream media. There's one man responsible for any sort of mention of fighter not named Conor McGregor gets in the national media, and that is Peter Carroll. Peetsy Carroll, more fondly known as. Peetsy was the first to get stuff in the papers, stuff in the news, stuff on the radio, different things like this over the years. Even now, more recently, with Paul Hughes, RTE talking about him, RTE talking about Ian Garry on their digital side of things. That's all down to one man and one man only. It's Peetsy Carroll. And it's Peetsy Carroll knocking the door in. It's not because someone is sitting in an editor's office being like, oh, there's an Irish MMA fighter fighting this weekend. Let's get one of the staff journos to write that up. Like, that's not happening. It's because it's been pushed by people who are passionate about the sport and want it to be seen by a wider audience and respected by a wider audience. So what I'm trying to link this with, and what I'm really trying to, probably in a bad way, say, like, looking back, like, objectively, we did discuss how hard it is for these shows to happen in the South. But I think that the fandom that's going to get behind these people in future, if they do make it to the UFC, will be directly related to, did they fight at a show that I went to? Did they win emphatically at a show that I went to? Do they train at a gym that I know of in Ireland? Who do they train with? Like, that will be a factor of when they get to the UFC that they're pushed and supported within the bubble of the sport, because it sometimes does feel like, from me, who's not involved in this sport as much anymore, who consumes a lot of stuff online, that Ian Garry last night won a decision, short notice, against one of the more dangerous fighters that he could have fought in the division, who I did think was going to cause him serious problems from what he was best at versus what Ian was best at. I thought he could match Ian in certain areas. He's now the confirmed backup fighter for the next welterweight title shot in case anything happens between either of the people that are meant to be in it. And there's a very good chance that after this many UFC fights and endorsements and different deals that he's done, if he's invested it correctly and generated his money, he probably doesn't even need to fight again as a professional to be able to be somewhat secure for the rest of his life. But I feel that within, there's such a disconnect online in terms of people liking him or being a fan of him and from Ireland. And I don't know if it's because he's not training in a gym over here. I don't know if it's because they didn't get to watch him in person on his way up to feel some sort of attachment to him. It is strange. But that's where we're going to leave it for today. The end of the MMA chat. A long episode, 50 minutes. Sorry for keeping you. Wow. End of the MMA chat in this podcast for a while anyway. Hoping to have another episode out though later in the week before I fly to Barcelona on Thursday for the Masters Europeans. But I won't be doing an episode over there. We're locked in. I'm locked in. Get the weight down over the next few days. I am backing myself to win it. I know we joked about it a couple of episodes ago, but this is as good as a chance as I will ever have of winning a European title. And I'm very much aware of what can happen when I perform and roll to a full throttle and good ability. I can't wait. We'll talk about it hopefully before Thursday. If not, when I get back from Barcelona next week. We are 1 5-star review on Spotify away from 100. So it'd be greatly appreciated if we could break the 100 barrier in the next couple of days, in the next week between now and when I'm talking to you again. Just on Spotify, go to the rating, give it 5 stars, be sound, share the podcast on to as many people as you can tolerate doing that, to friends, training partners, maybe even to enemies. I don't mind. Thank you very much for tuning in. Enjoy the rest of your week. Chat to you either before Barcelona or, as I said, next week when we get back. Good luck.